Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. You are always the protector of the deserving living beings, such as brahmanas, children, cows, women, and the diseased. Could you not give them protection when they approached you for shelter? Purport. The brahmanas, who are always engaged in researching knowledge for the society's welfare work, Shishirada Gokulananda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Gauranitai Srila Prabhupada Ki. The brahmanas, who are always engaged in researching knowledge for the society's welfare work, both materially and spiritually, deserve the protection of the king in all respects. Similarly, the children of the state, the cow, the diseased person, the woman, and the old man specifically require the protection of the state or a Kshatriya king. If such living beings do not get protection by the Kshatriya or the royal order or by the state, it is certainly shameful for the Kshatriya or the state. If such things had actually happened to Arjuna, Maharaj Yudhishthira was anxious to know about these discrepancies. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagana Raghunathanvitam Tam sajivam sadvaitam savadutam parijana sahitam krishna chaitanya devam shri radha krishna padan sagana lalita shri krishna rabdhamscha he krishna karuna sindhu din bandhu jagatpate gopesha gopika kanta radha kanta namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So first of all, I would like to seek the blessings and permission of all the senior Vaishnavas in the room, especially Maharaj, Sutapa Prabhu, Gaura Krishna Prabhu, Srinivas Prabhu, Venugopal Prabhu, and all the other Vaishnavas present in the room. So I can say something useful, or at least say something for my own purification. So in this verse, just to give a little bit of background, Arjuna's returned from Dwarka, and he's about to give Yudhishthira Maharaj the news of what's going on. And in anticipation, Yudhishthira Maharaj has seen that Arjuna doesn't look very happy, or he looks a bit disturbed or upset. And so Maharaj Yudhishthira is trying to work out what has actually happened. Technically, he knows what's happened, as we discussed last time, because Narad Muni has already told him what's going to happen. But he's trying to... He's listing out different reasons why a Kshatriya would be unhappy. And one of the reasons is mentioned here, is that a Kshatriya's main duty is to give protection to the state and to all the citizens of the state. And it does not mean just humans, even cows and all animals and every living entity in the state is worthy of protection by a Kshatriya. And that's his duty. So Yudhishthira Maharaj is saying, did you fail to give protection to any of these people and hence not perform your duty as a Kshatriya, and is that why you're unhappy? So that's the question that's being raised. And in the purport, Prabhupada explains how it's a Kshatriya's duty to protect all these people. Now, so today's verse is all about protection, and it's all about how different varnas give protection in different ways. For a society to exist in a very healthy way, everybody has a contribution to make. And everybody has a contribution in terms of protecting something. So the Brahmanas protect something in society, the Kshatriyas protect something, the Vaishyas protect something, and the Shudras also protect something. And if everybody protects everything properly, then society can function as it is. In this case, it is explained the Kshatriya's duty is to protect physically and make sure everyone's safe. But there are other protection by other Varnas, so which we're going to look at in today's class. Hopefully I can share some of my thoughts and some things that I've read. And also, we'll also try and look at, as Vaishnavas, there's an extra responsibility of protecting something within society, within the ISKCON society. Since Varnashram's there, but more so it's you know, a Vaishnava society. So what are we meant to protect in society to make sure it's a healthy, functioning society? So we'll look at all these things. And what are we meant to protect in our own spiritual life? So it's all about protection. Let me tell you a little story. So once upon a time, there was a thief. I don't know why I'm facing this way. It's just the Vyasa sense this way. So it's whoever's arranged it. So there was a thief, and the thief was doing what thieves do. They go around stealing things. So once this thief decided that he was going to steal from a rich man's house, so he went to the man's house. And as he went to the house, he noticed that there was the recitation of the Bhagavatam going on in that house. So there was a Brahmana there reciting the Bhagavatam. Everybody was listening to it. So he got in somehow, but he had to wait till the recitation was finished. So he hid somewhere in the attic or in a little corner somewhere. And he was sort of forced to listen to the Bhagavatam. He didn't really want to, but he was there. He was hiding. So, and he was waiting for it to be finished so he can carry on with his business of stealing. So he was listening to the Bhagavatam. And the Brahmana who was reciting the Bhagavatam was describing how every morning Mother Yashoda would dress Krishna in wonderful ornaments like rubies, emeralds, pearls, different jewels, bracelets, crown, all these things. And she would let him, give him, you know, take him to the end of the village, say goodbyes, and then let him go. And Krishna, with all his cowherd boyfriends and cows, would wander off into the forest. So the thief was listening to all this and thinking, you know what? He goes, I'm done with all this little stealing here and there, you know. It's like, if I can just get these ornaments of this boy, then I'm sorted for life. He goes, I just need to find this guy, get his ornaments, then I can just, you know, retire from my profession. So he waited for it to be over, and then when the Brahmana left, he didn't steal anything from the house, so he followed the Brahmana. And when they were in a secluded place, he caught the Brahmana. So the Brahmana was afraid. He said, whoa, whoa, whoa. He said, I don't have anything with me. So he was afraid. This, you know, I've got little Dakshina, he's going to take that as well. He goes, don't worry, I don't want anything from you. He goes, okay, that's an interesting thief. What would you like? He goes, you know, I was there, and you were describing about this boy with all these ornaments and all that. So where can I find him? So he goes, okay, you know. He said, that boy lives in Vrindavan. And every day, every morning, he goes to the bank of the Yamuna. And he herds the cows. And he's wearing all his ornaments and stuff. So he goes, okay, Vrindavan, banks of the Yamuna, okay. So thief lets him go. Then he goes, he makes his journey to Vrindavan. So he goes all the way to Vrindavan. And he goes to the forest on the banks of the Yamuna, gets there the night before just to make sure he's there on time, you know, takes his nap under a tree, wakes up early, and he hides behind the tree, and he's waiting, see if Krishna comes. 7 o'clock, Govindam Adipurusham, and Krishna comes. Krishna's there with all his ornaments. Krishna's there, Balaram's there, all the cowherd boys are there, all the cows are there, and he's looking. And as soon as he sees Krishna and the cowherd boys and he sees Balaram, his mood completely changes. He's just overwhelmed with love. He goes, wow, this boy is so beautiful. He's just so captivated. He goes, who would, like, you know, put all these ornaments on a boy and just leave him alone in the forest? You know, and he was just so captivated by the boy, and he forgets all about his stealing and everything. So then, you know, Krishna is walking past. So then he's so captivated, he doesn't want Krishna to go away. So he runs and he catches Krishna's hand. And then Krishna looks at him and he gets a bit scared looking at the thief, because, you know, thieves are scary people. So he gets a bit scared. He goes, "Oh, can you let me go?" And then the thief goes, "Look, sorry, I don't mean to hurt you. If you're afraid, I'll let you go. I'll go away. You know, I won't bother you. But I was just so captivated by you, and I just wanted to know who you are, and you know what's going on, and why is your mother putting all these ornaments and letting you go?" And then Krishna goes, "You know what?" He goes, "I'm a thief, just like you." And then he goes, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Yeah, I'm a thief, but I do a different kind of stealing." He goes, "When I steal, people actually like it. People actually love, they actually prepare all their houses and stuff, and they wait for me to come and steal." He goes, "What do you steal?" The thief asked him. He goes, "My name is Chitta Chor." He goes, "I steal the heart of my devotees. And you didn't realize, but I've already done my thief thing, you know, I've already stolen your heart." And so the thief goes, he's totally bewildered. And he goes, he starts going away. So Krishna says, wait, don't forget the purpose you came here for. He goes, "What?" He goes, "You came for my ornaments, right?" He goes, "Here, take my ornaments." He goes, no, I can't take your ornaments. What's your mother going to think when you get back? Because she'll be, you know, wouldn't she be upset? He goes, no, I got loads. Don't worry about that. And he goes, no, I don't want your ornaments. He goes, no, it's okay. And then Krishna goes away, and then he finds there's a bag on his shoulder somehow, and he looks, and there's all these ornaments. So the thief goes, you know, fair deal. So he goes back, and then, you heard the story before? Yeah. So the thief goes back, and he catches the brahmana, and he tells him, "Oh, thanks for that, you know, it's like, this is really good." And he goes, "What do you mean?" He goes, "I got all the ornaments." He goes, "Really?" He goes, "Yeah." So he goes, "Show me the bag." So he shows him the bag, he opens the bag and looks inside, and it's exactly what he was describing when he was doing the Bhagavad Katha, all the same ornaments. So Brahmana can't, like, believe his eyes, you know, he doesn't believe this is actually happening. So he goes, "Wait, you actually saw Krishna and you took all the ornaments from him?" He goes, "Yeah, I didn't want to take it, but he gave it to me." Like, he goes, "Okay, this gets more and more interesting." He goes, "Can you take me there?" The thief goes, "Yeah, sure, I'll take you there." So the next day they both travel to Vrindavan and, you know, get there a day before as usual. They hide behind the tree. 7 o'clock, Govindam. Okay, Govindam prayers go on. And then Krishna's there with the cowherd boys, with all the cows, with Balaram, and he's all there. And the thief goes, "Here they come." And guess what? Brahmana can't see anything. So the Brahmana's there. He goes, "Where?" And the thief goes, "Well, they're just there. Can't you see them?" He goes, "No, I can't see anybody." And so then the Brahmana gets really upset. He goes, like, he starts praying to Krishna. He says, "Krishna," he goes, "I've been reciting the Bhagavatam all my life, worshipping you." He goes, "But this ordinary thief who came to steal your jewels saw you. But I can't see you. Why is that?" So Krishna, being all merciful, doesn't appear before him, but he hears a sound in the sky, and it tells him, "Yes, you've been reciting the Bhagavatam, but do you actually believe the Bhagavatam? This person actually believed the Bhagavatam, and he actually came here looking for the, whatever his intention may be, whatever it is, but he had full faith and he came. But do you have full faith? That's the question." So my question is, we're reading the Bhagavatam every day. So do we think the Bhagavatam is a book of nice stories? Or do we think, even if, is the Bhagavatam a book of historical accounts that happened 5,000 years ago? Is that what we believe? Or do we believe the Bhagavatam, and do we believe that Krishna is actually there in the pages of the Bhagavatam? What do you think? Is Krishna there? Is he there? So why don't you see him? Yes, Mataji. You have to know he's there. Yes, you have to know he's there. Maharaj, sir. Well, we see him at 7 o'clock every day. We see him, yeah, definitely. Krishna is the Bhagavatam. Yes, Krishna is not in the Bhagavatam. Krishna is the Bhagavatam. So, We don't always see Krishna in the Bhagavatam or through the Bhagavatam unless we have full faith and unless we have conviction. But at the same time, if you want to see Krishna in the pages of the Bhagavatam, there's another way to do it as well. How do you develop, let me ask you the question, how do you develop faith in the Bhagavatam so much that you can see Krishna in the Bhagavatam? How can you develop that faith? What are the ideas? Let's see. Amit Prabhu. Associating with people who have that vision, yes? Anybody else? Maharaj?
Hare Krishna. Hare Bol. Yeah, in my personal reading, I'm following the Dhruva story, Dhruva Maharaj's story. And it's quite interesting how, you know, it's our story, really, Dhruva Maharaj's story, because we come to Krishna and we have so many material desires, and then those material desires become fulfilled, and we feel empty inside, and we really feel that something is missing. And then that helps us to go deeper. So I was thinking that if we relate Bhagavatam to our own lives and see that all the stories from Bhagavatam are the stories from our lives, that can help us to see Krishna.
Definitely. Yeah. Thank you, Maharaj. Yeah, see the Bhagavatam as our own story. Isn't that? Thank you. Any other answers?
If you read very attentively, every shloka, every word, every, you know, and Srila Prabhupada, he wrote amazing comments, which every comment is like, it's not like, but it was his ecstasy. So if we evaluate that point, and while we're reading, we can experience every moment, you know, Krishna.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. Yeah, read with attention and understand. Try and understand Prabhupada's purport. Now, if you look at, it's very difficult to understand the Bhagavatam. In fact, it's very difficult to relate to it as well sometimes. Sometimes it feels like, you know, like flying dragons and, you know, like demons. And it's like seems like something too far away. It's actually, in one sense, I find it easier to relate to like the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's very human. It's very easy to relate to. Bhagavatam seems like a very lofty thing. And even easier to relate to is Prabhupada's pastimes. In fact, if Prabhupada didn't write the purports to the Bhagavatam, it would be very, very difficult to understand anything in the Bhagavatam. You wouldn't know what to do with the Bhagavatam. So Prabhupada's purports are very, very important. And that led me to the point that there are two things. There is the book Bhagavat and the person Bhagavat. Okay? Krishna in Kali Yuga manifests as the Bhagavatam. Okay? The book Bhagavatam. So we can understand, we can read the Bhagavatam and we can understand Krishna. But at the same time, just as powerful is the process of serving the person Bhagavat. And a person Bhagavat is someone who is living the Bhagavatam. And by serving the person Bhagavat, you can understand the book Bhagavat because a person has understood it and is living it. That's how you do it. So if you try and serve these amazing devotees, then it'll help you develop that conviction and that faith in the Bhagavatam that you'll be able to see Krishna in the pages of the Bhagavatam. Now, these Bhagavats, these Mahabhagavats, these amazing devotees are not just in the Bhagavatam. Okay, sometimes we think, yes, Dhruva Maharaj, he's an amazing devotee. Prahlad Maharaj, he's an amazing devotee. And all these devotees, they are, undoubtedly, they're amazing. But we have to try and see that there are amazing devotees here as well. Okay, right now. But sometimes we see all these devotees in the Bhagavatam as objects of our worship and all the devotees around us as objects of our criticism, you know, because they're here, we try to find faults. I remember Maharaj gave a class some time ago and he was explaining the process of how we think when we come to Krishna consciousness, how everybody is amazing, But slowly we start seeing everybody's faults. And then finally we realize that we're the amazing ones and everybody else has problems with them. But somehow these devotees, Prahlad Maharaj, Dhruva Maharaj, are very easy to worship because you can't see any faults because you're reading the book. But when we're here, then we try to find faults with people. But if you try to serve these Vaishnavas who are here, then it'll help you develop faith in the Bhagavatam. Now, recently, you know, a couple of days ago, Maharaj, Bhakti Charu Maharaj left his body. And I was just thinking how amazing a Vaishnava he was. And yesterday we also heard from many, many devotees how they were glorifying. And I actually got to understand Maharaj a bit more. I never had so much association with Maharaj. The only one interaction I had with Maharaj, which was very powerful actually, was when he came to the ashram a few years ago. And he was having a conversation with Shruti Prabhu. And he was saying, like, you have a lot of devotees here, but where are all the local devotees? Where are all the Western devotees? So Shruti Prabhu said, ah, hang on, we do have Western devotees. And then he said, he came to me and said, can you explain to Maharaj all the programs that are going on and what we're doing for preaching and stuff? So he left me there and he went away. So I was with Maharaj for 45 minutes in the medical room upstairs. And I was explaining to him, and he was asking questions, and I was saying, this is how we're doing preaching. And he said, this is very good, you should carry on. This was Prabhupada's mood, he said, that you preach to the local people. If you look at Prabhupada, when devotees were trying to arrange programs for Prabhupada in Africa, and Prabhupada went there, and then there was a big hall packed out, but it was mostly Indian people, and Prabhupada looked at the devotees and said, where are all the local African people? So Prabhupada always wanted the local people to come. And I remember Bhakti Charu Maharaj also told me the same thing. He said, this is very good, we should make an endeavor to preach to the local people. So if you want to understand the Bhagavatam, you serve the Bhagavats, okay? And the Bhagavats are one who really take the order of the spiritual master and the order of the Bhagavatam as a heart and soul. And I can see Maharaj did that, you know. He was everywhere, traveling, preaching, always. That was his main thing. He wouldn't take one day away. I remember Maharaj once gave a class here in the manor. And he was explaining how he was traveling so much and preaching. And somebody told him, Maharaj, why don't you take some time off and just go and recuperate? And Maharaj's answer was, why would I want some time off in Krishna consciousness, from Krishna consciousness? Because Krishna consciousness is so enlivening. Why would you want to have time off from that? Usually take time off from something that's boring, that's training, to do something relaxing, you see. But Krishna consciousness itself is so enlivening. Why would you want time out from Krishna consciousness? Why would you want to take a break? Preaching is the thing that is the break. So... So this mood should be there. So if you want to understand the Bhagavatam, you serve the Bhagavats, and you will see Krishna's presence there in the service. Okay, you'll see Krishna in the service. You'll see Krishna in the pages of the Bhagavatam. In a similar way, if you want to associate with Srila Prabhupada, the way to do it is to follow the instructions of Prabhupada. And when you dedicate your life to following and serving the instructions of Srila Prabhupada, you will feel Prabhupada's presence. That's how you associate with Prabhupada. And so many devotees will tell you that when they're having their, you know, a tough day on book distribution, when they're fully absorbed in preaching in whatever form they're preaching, they can actually feel Prabhupada's presence. And that's the way you associate with your spiritual master as well. When the spiritual master is physically present, you can associate with him, you can serve him, and you can hear his instructions as well. But when the spiritual master is not with us, then by being absorbed in the instructions of the spiritual master, you can actually associate with your spiritual master. Now, there's a quote in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Leela, first chapter. This Srila Prabhupada writes this in the purport, okay? The service of the spiritual master is essential. If there is no chance to serve the spiritual master directly, a devotee should serve him by remembering his instructions. There is no difference between the spiritual master's instructions and the spiritual master himself. In his absence, therefore, his words of direction should be the pride of the disciple. So by serving the instructions of the spiritual master, one can actually associate with the spiritual master. So that's, we've spoken about the Bhagavatam, we've spoken about the Mahabhagavats and the Bhagavats. But another little sort of disease that we have within us is that we like to see all the great devotees, all the sannyasis, all the, you know, Prabhupada disciples as devotees, but then what about everybody else? Okay? We think they're okay, you know, they're good guys, you know, they're a bunch of good people. But we should have that vision as well, because Krishna has put these people here with you for a reason. And like I was explaining some time ago, that service is the essence of all relationships with Krishna. The foundation of everything is service. No matter what rasa you're in, service is the foundation. So first thing, if you want to realize your relationship with Krishna, first of all, you have to cultivate the mood of service. Unless you do that, your relationship is not going to be manifest. First, learn to serve. And Krishna has put all these people with you to give you that opportunity to cultivate the mood of service. That's why they're there. So we should try and cultivate that mood towards all devotees, not just all the big devotees, but all devotees. My spiritual master once told me that you should always treat everybody with respect and serve everybody, because you don't know who's who. Okay, we make distinctions based on external appearances. But he said it may be that someone is a sannyasi in this life, but it may be his first life in Krishna consciousness. But you could have a bhakta, you know, doing the bhakta course, but it may be that it's his last life in Krishna consciousness and he's just finishing it off and he's going to go back to Godhead after that. Okay? So just because someone is in a better position, we shouldn't assume that they're better and somebody else is not. So we should try and serve all devotees, okay, like that. And by serving the devotees, we'll develop a service attitude. By developing a service attitude, we'll be able to understand our relationship, but at the same time, we'll be able to see Krishna in the pages of the Bhagavatam as well, by serving the Bhagavats. Very, very important. Let's wait for the Lord. Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Shri Shri Gauru Nitai Ki Srila Prabhupada Ki. Now, okay, while it happens, Jai. Now, in when all the devotees from Bengal come to see Lord Chaitanya in Mayapur, and Lord Chaitanya meets them, and they stay there for a while, for about 3-4 months, and then when it's time for them to leave, Lord Chaitanya is glorifying all the devotees, and it's time to bid farewell. Now they're about to go. So before they go, Satyaraj Khan actually asks Lord Chaitanya. Well, Lord Chaitanya tells him that you should always serve all the Vaishnavas. That's what you should do. And he said, well, how do I recognize a Vaishnava? So Lord Chaitanya answers to Satyaraj Khan. He says, whoever chants the holy name of Krishna just once is worshipable and is the topmost human being. So it's very interesting that there are different classifications of Vaishnavas mentioned, but at the same time it's also said that even someone who chants once the holy name of Krishna is the topmost human being. So we should treat everybody with respect and we should learn to offer service to them. You may or may not think they're worthy of your service, but what you should see is that it's helping me cultivate a mood of service. Let's not try and judge where the Vaishnavas are at, whether they're here or here or here. What we should be looking at is, if I serve, then I'll cultivate a mood of service and it's beneficial for me. I don't need to worry about what level of qualification they're at. But it's for my benefit that I need to cultivate the mood of service. Now, as Vaishnavas, this is the first thing we should cultivate. Okay, the mood of service. And it's very, very important because this is an important part of Vaishnava culture. And we're trying to protect Vaishnava culture. And that's one of our responsibilities. To protect something means to take responsibility for preserving certain principles. That's what protection means. Protection means taking responsibility. Okay, I'll give you an example. Like, for example, say Prabhupada said everybody should chant 16 rounds. Okay? So if you chant 16 rounds, if you tell everybody to chant 16 rounds, and if you try and preach and inspire people to chant 16 rounds, then you're protecting the principle that Prabhupada gave. You're protecting Prabhupada's instruction that he said everybody should chant 16 rounds. Protection means to follow and to propagate. That's what protection means. So as Vaishnavas, our duty is to protect the instructions that the spiritual master has given, that the founder Acharya has set, and to propagate them. And that is our duty in society. Now, within ISKCON, because we are part of ISKCON, and ISKCON is Prabhupada's movement that he set up, it is our responsibility to protect ISKCON as well. Okay? And by saying protecting ISKCON, I mean that we should preserve what ISKCON is set up for. Okay, we should understand the purpose of ISKCON and try and protect it. Now, we usually have this conception that ISKCON is not us, it's some managers or some governing body somewhere. Okay, Kishori was just telling me yesterday, she was listening to a lecture and somebody asked a question to this devotee. He said, and they were saying, Maharaj, you know, ISKCON is like this, ISKCON is like that, ISKCON, this problem with ISKCON, there's that problem with ISKCON. And Maharaj said, no, you can't say that because you are ISKCON. Okay, it's not like ISKCON is something else. If you're criticizing ISKCON, you're criticizing yourself because you're part of ISKCON. Okay? So you are ISKCON. So if you want to protect, we need to protect ISKCON as well, and we need to take responsibility. Everybody needs to take responsibility for sharing Prabhupada's movement. It's not that the responsibility lies with the managers or the leaders or the sannyasis. The responsibility for preaching and protecting ISKCON lies with each one of us because we're the ones who make up ISKCON. Do you get me? Okay. Now let's look at what different varnas protect. Okay, within society. Now Prabhupada said this is a society for brahmanas. Prabhupada said society is mainly just hands and legs nowadays, mainly legs, shudras. But Prabhupada said within the ISKCON movement we're trying to cultivate brahmanas. Okay, so we're trying to give a head to society. Brahmanas doesn't mean that you need to have a thread around you. That's the formality. But brahmana means try and cultivate brahminical principles. Okay, so what are the responsibility of different varnas? So we looked at kshatriyas. So kshatriyas protect the citizens, they protect cows, they protect women, make sure the finances are okay. What do brahmanas protect? What's their responsibility? What are they trying to protect? Culture? Knowledge? How do they protect knowledge? By passing, yeah, learning and teaching. Okay, patan patan. Okay, what else do brahmanas protect? Brahmanas protect principles. Any else? Worship of the Lord? Yeah, definitely. So all these things are responsibility for protection by brahmanas. And then kshatriyas protect, we've discussed already. What do vaishyas protect? Vaishyas protect cows. Anything else? Economy, yes, protecting the finances. That's a Vaishya's responsibility. What else do they protect? Resources, like? Yeah. Also agriculture, that's a responsibility of Vaishya's. Trading is a responsibility of Vaishya's. So Vaishya's are protecting the finance. Kshatriyas are protecting, giving physical protection. And Brahmanas are protecting knowledge. What do Shudras protect in society? Huh? Jobs. Protect the jobs, job protection. Protect themselves. Yeah. They serve the others, yeah. They're protecting the principle of service. Okay? Everybody is protecting something in a culture. When everybody protects what they're meant to protect, takes responsibility for it, then a culture, then a society can flourish. If it doesn't, if they don't, then it won't flourish. So why am I telling you this? Because we need to understand that because we are part of society, it is our responsibility also to protect certain things. It's not that the responsibility lies with other people. Okay? Everybody needs to take responsibility to protect whatever they're good at and whatever varna they're in. Like that. That's very, very important. Attitude of service, very, very important. That's the first thing we should cultivate. We're very good at writing your servant, isn't it, under emails. Like, your servant. And then if you go a little bit further, if you're a little bit more humble, then it's your humble servant. Your humble. Then there's also your fallen servant. Your fallen servant. But then what happens is, then what happens is people become... It's like, okay, I'm writing this too much, let's just abbreviate it a little bit. So then it's YS. It's like YS. Then you get YHS, okay, your humble servant. Then you get YFS, your fallen servant. Once I got an email from a devotee, he had YMFS. Okay, and I couldn't sleep for 2 days. I'm like, what's YMFS? I couldn't work it out. Then eventually I emailed him. He goes, your most fallen servant. So, and if someone emails you, Prabhu, can you do this for me? Sorry, Prabhu, I'm too busy. YS. You know, so the idea is that what I'm trying to say is that within Vaishnavas, that's something we do need to protect, a service attitude. And it's not just a matter of writing it in your email, or not just saying it. People say, you know, Prabhu, I'm your servant. But then when people ask us to do something, it's like, no, go away. So it's very, very important to protect that. So basically, I'm just going to summarize quickly, and then we can take some questions. I had a few things on Kshatriya protection as well, but we don't have time. First point is that Krishna is in the pages of the Bhagavatam. In fact, Krishna is the Bhagavatam. And if we have faith, then we'll see Krishna in the Bhagavatam. And if you want to develop faith in the Bhagavat, the book Bhagavat, then you serve the person Bhagavat. Okay? Bhagavats, these Mahabhagavats, person Bhagavats are not just in the Bhagavatam, they're all around us. And we should learn to develop a service attitude to try and serve them. And everybody has a responsibility to protect something in society, and everybody needs to take personal responsibility, not just leave it on to others, but everybody should take responsibility to take on Prabhupada's movement forward. And that way, you're protecting Prabhupada's legacy. Okay? I'm going to tell you one quick thing. Kripamoya Prabhu mentioned it in yesterday's talk, that a good disciple is one who protects three things. Okay, this is mentioned by Pillai Lokacharya in one of the Sri Vaishnava literatures. And he mentions a good disciple protects three things of the spiritual master. First, he protects the physical legacy of the spiritual master. Okay, so which means temples, worship, physical legacy. He protects the intellectual legacy of the spiritual master. All his instructions, teachings, all that is protected. And the third thing he protects is the fame of the spiritual master. So disciple should always be very careful in how he behaves and how he interacts. Because if he does something dodgy, people will say, hey, who's the spiritual master? Okay? So you want to be very, very careful. And at the same time, he tries to spread the glories and the fame of the spiritual master. So if you want to be a good disciple, these are things we need to protect. So many things to protect for us, okay? So that's a little bit of meditation for us, some reflections from today's class. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Do we have any questions, Maharaj? Please don't ask me difficult questions, Maharaj.
No, it's going to be an easy one. Okay. First, I wanted to appreciate the fifth story, even though I've heard it before, but it was peculiar. How can it evolve from one speaker to the other? I never heard the ending of the story. I was actually thinking the ending will be that Krishna will respond that these faith can see me, but you Brahmana cannot, because during your classes people were falling asleep, but when I was robbing them they were praying to me. So he contributed more to making people Krishna conscious than you. So anyway, it's interesting, you know, that Prabhupada told the story in a very basic format, but then it evolves, you know, the more people tell the story. So devotees are very creative. Yeah, thank you for mentioning the point about Prabhupada's vision for ISKCON. Somehow Prabhupada, you know, made it crystal clear with the very first purpose of ISKCON, that it's meant to be live spiritual movement, but for some strange reason, to the most part, it turned into kind of stagnant religious bureaucracy, which is, you know, something to work on. And when you were mentioning that Bhakti Charu Maharaj was discussing with you the Western outreach, did he made any specific suggestions what can be helpful in that regard, or he was just appreciating?
No, I think he didn't mention anything specific, but he mentioned that Prabhupada always wanted this, and this is something everybody should do, is try and engage local devotees, local people in Krishna consciousness. That's something he mentioned. Yeah. Thank you, Maharaj. Ian Prabhu and Sutta Prabhu. You guys can decide who goes first between you.
Hare Krishna. Yeah, thank you so much for your class. It's in regards to a point that Maharaj was making about how if we try to see, you know, ourselves or like relate to the Bhagavatam even more, then we can be able to see Krishna. I just wanted to ask how we can probably do that in a practical level, just because at times you have discussions with people and you feel, oh, you know, I kind of feel like I'm Prahlad, but then you get that, no, you're not Prahlad, which obviously we understand, but there's the fear of familiarizing ourselves with these personalities and becoming content like that. So probably a suggestion of how we can be kind of reflecting on it in our own lives and making, you know, so we can still acknowledge that that's Krishna, but not feel like we're too comfortable or easy with it.
With the book?
Yeah. No, the teachings in the book.
The so teachings the in the book.
Personalities and these people, because you mentioned that they're, you know, they are real people. They've gone through something. So how can we be more relatable with them without feeling, you know, like, yeah.
How can we be more relatable to the personalities,
yeah,
the devotees in the Bhagavatam?
Yeah. What suggestions do you have on that? Yeah.
What suggestions do I have? I don't know. I mean, I myself find it difficult to relate to them sometimes. It's on a too high platform. and that's why I made the point that it's very helpful to serve Vaishnavas who are around us. And that will actually help you cultivate the mood of service. I don't know, Maharaj, do you have any points on how we can relate to these personalities in the Bhagavatam?
Yeah, definitely certain things in the Bhagavatam we can't relate to, because it's just beyond the scope of our imagination, even what to speak of understanding. But it just helps us to become a little bit more humble in terms of, okay, I cannot understand anything. I'm not, you know, as great in terms of figuring things out as I would like myself to be. But there are many, many, many points. I mean, the whole range of Bhagavatam stories are very relatable. And actually, what I found, you know, because, yes, it is true that many times when we have questions, we have, you know, some senior devotees who can answer. But exactly same knowledge Paramatma has, and Paramatma can give us the same knowledge. And so if we really want to understand, you know, I come across something I can't understand and I don't have anyone to ask immediately, I can just ask Paramatma in my heart, how can I relate to that? How can I make it more relevant in my life? And if you're sincerely inquiring from within, you'll definitely get the answer.
Thank you, Maharaj. One thing that comes to mind, Maharaj, since you spoke, is if you look at the Bhagavatam and all these amazing devotees, of course we can't relate to the level of austerity they do and the level of devotion they have. But one thing we can relate to is that if you look at all these personalities, all these devotees, there's not a single story in the Bhagavatam that says this person was an amazing devotee, he practiced Krishna consciousness and he went back to Godhead. You just see the story of every single devotee and how they're just suffering. Something's always going wrong in their life, whether it's Prahlad Maharaj or Dhruva Maharaj or Prithu Maharaj or whoever you see, they're all just going through difficulties. But one thing you see in all these devotees, a common factor, is that doesn't matter what difficulty they went through, they always turned to the Lord for protection. They were always totally, totally relying on the Lord's mercy. Like, they never thought that, okay, this is happening, let me try and do this, let me try and do that. No, Amrish Maharaj, what does he do? Relies on the mercy of the Lord. Prahlad Maharaj relies on the mercy of the Lord. Dhruva Maharaj worships the Lord. Same thing. Every single devotee you see, in the greatest calamity, they remember the Lord and surrender to the Lord. That's one thing we can learn from them. That's one thing we can, how we can relate to them. So we don't need to relate to so much to all the austerities, standing on one foot for 3,000 years or something. But at least if we can understand that when we go through difficulties, do we turn to, you know, like this lockdown? Do you turn to, you know, all our life we've been learning how we should rely on the Lord. But when there's lockdown, what is it? Netflix and cornflakes, ice cream. Not cornflakes, definitely not cornflakes. We're meant to surrender to a Lord in difficulty, but when we're in difficulty, we surrender to Netflix and ice cream. Okay? So we should see, when there's difficulty, then we should surrender to the Lord. Okay, Sutta Prabhu.
Yeah, just on that point, thank you for the class, by the way, very nice. I was thinking that actually the characters of the Bhagavatam are like super relatable, but it's just the degree in which they're doing those things that is unrelatable to us. Like that Dhruva Maharaj is dissatisfied with material things. It's like we all experience that, but the extent of his dissatisfaction and what he then does is a bit unrelatable. You know, that Prahlad Maharaj, you know, takes shelter of the Lord in a difficult time because, you know, there's no other shelter. We all have that experience, but the degree is... or, you know, like Brahma has like problems as a manager of the universe. Like how many devotees here have problems in management? It's like exactly the same problems. But the degree of how Brahma responds. So I think what the Bhagavatam is doing is providing something completely relatable, but then telling us, okay, increase the intensity, increase the level of this quality. So I just wanted to say that, and just to make a bit of an advert as well, if that's okay. You talked about how we can go deeper with the Bhagavatam, and one thing Prabhupada talked about again and again is he wanted his devotees to write. Like I was just reading the other day about how they began Back to Godhead, and the devotees were just in the movement a few months, and Prabhupada was telling them, one article by my Guru Maharaj, one article by me, and one article by you. He immediately put them on the same level as the Guru Parampara in terms of publishing articles. So one thing, one project we're doing now is we're writing, we're compiling a book on essays on the Bhagavatam, and we're inviting all the devotees to come forward. They can take any pastime of the Bhagavatam and then relate it to the world, relate it to their life. And then we'll provide the support, and then we're going to put together a whole book on the Bhagavatam and the world we're living in today. So invite all the devotees here in the room, all the devotees online. If you'd like to, then just go to www.schoolofbhakti.com, or you can email info@schoolofbhakti.com, say you want to get involved in the Bhagavatam project, and hopefully we'll be able to produce something wonderful. And every devotee who writes, who deeply contemplates on the words of the Bhagavatam, will find that it just goes so much deeper, because that's the process that our acharyas gave us, to mananam, to deeply think about these stories.
Thank you, Sridhar Prabhu. I'll charge you later for the advert. Prayojana Prabhu has a comment. It's probably on.
Okay. We relate to the Bhagavatam and try and understand it.
Yeah.
The classic Paranjan story in the Bhagavatam, where Prabhupada explains certain representations made in the verses. And there's no way we would understand them without Prabhupada.
Mm-hmm.
He actually... It's just so deep, and you can't take it from the verses. It was impossible. And, his depth of understanding, especially in that particular pastime, how he explains the representations of Paranjan and all the things of the chariot, the body, and all that, it's not possible for us to understand without Prabhupada's purport.
Mm.
It's just, just going into that pastime, it's impossible we could derive anything from it without his purport. It's just so deep. And we're struggling,
yeah.
In our little Bhagavatam studies, just to get it there. And it's like a miracle how he draws out the meaning. And understanding. So it does need the acharya somehow or other.
Yeah.
Otherwise we'd be lost without his analysis, which he did in that particular time. Anyway, that's from my point of view. We just couldn't understand it. It wasn't possible.
That's good. Thank you, Prabhu.
Okay.
So Prayojana Prabhu is saying, without Prabhupada's purport, it's difficult to understand the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada's purports are the lifesaver. Thank you, Prabhu. Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Prabhupada ki.